Hello and welcome back to Life Lessons. In this episode, I have Dr. Michelle Hone, and Michelle has a PhD in nutrition and is founder of the Fit Clinic, which is a team of registered nutritionists specializing in a range of different areas, mostly in female health. Michelle is currently studying fertility nutrition through a mentorship and has been sharing some really helpful information on her Instagram to help demystify the mystery that is female hormones and fertility. Perhaps you've been on a fertility journey for some time or are considering trying to conceive in the near future and want to prepare yourself with as much knowledge as possible. Maybe you've no interest in trying for baby anytime soon, but want to understand the importance of hormones on female health. I hope everyone will get something out of this episode. And I think this is a great time to speak about our sponsor of the episode, which is Whoop. And Whoop is a wearable health and fitness coach that specializes in breaking down your recovery, sleep and workouts, while also helping you to manage your overall health and well-being. We speak about stress and overtraining in this episode, and this is where I think it is so beneficial to have an app that can help you consider whether you're putting your body under too much strain with your training, or whether there's room for improvement with your sleep, or if you need to keep an eye on your stress levels. Whoop can do all of this from your wrist or wherever you want to wear it, with an accompanying app to get a visual on your training, your recovery and your stress. And the new stress monitor has actually been so interesting to me over the last few weeks because it's even telling me when I'm having nightmares. And if you'd like to start tracking your health, your wellness and your fitness at a deeper level today, go to join.whoop.com/Siobhan to get your first month free and a free Whoop 4.0. That's join.whoop.com/Siobhan. I'll have a link in the show notes. So thank you in advance to anyone who supports the sponsors of the show, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Great to see you again. I was just thinking it's been so long since we've actually seen each other in person.
It must be 2 years ago.
Yeah. We met in PTI.
Yeah.
Initially, yeah. I was like, look at that athlete, and she's also a genius. And yeah, so obviously then I've worked with you, or like your team coached me through a great time. It really helped me in my relationship with food back in, that was probably around 2018, 2019. But obviously you've even excelled yourself studying more and more. And I wanted to bring you on to talk about all things hormones, and in particular fertility, because you're doing a fertility mentorship now. Is that the right way to say it?
Yeah. And we provide a program, like a 90-day program for
The fertility focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what brought that about?
I suppose in Ireland especially, we have a real medical approach when it comes to fertility. So if you were to pop into your GP and tell them that you were thinking about trying to conceive, the blanket advice is come back to me in 6 to 12 months if nothing has happened, depending on your age, 6 to 12 months, and take folic acid. And that's all of the advice that you get. So we know from the research that there's so much more that you can do from a fertility aspect to help your egg health, your sperm health, if you have a male partner on this journey, and really give your body the best possible chance of trying to conceive. And it goes so much further beyond just taking folic acid. So really, I wanted to put together like a full 360 approach, a 360 degree approach to fertility that encompasses nutrition, supplementation, lifestyle changes, exercise, managing your mindset, yoga, meditation, so that I can give like couples and women their power back. Because especially if people are struggling to conceive, it's a real loss of power. And I feel like you're a control freak, same as me. For someone who's a control freak, it's so difficult that something like that is out of their control. And if you go to your GP, you can often feel really disempowered and feel like there's nothing you can do to help the journey. So the whole goal of the program is to give women and couples that power back.
Yes. And the question is, when do people start preparing for pregnancy? You know, like say I'm whatever, or say any other person who is not pregnant is any other age, and they might be like, okay, you know, maybe when I'm 28, I want to start having kids or I want to start my family. When then should they start, you know, preparing for it? Like even maybe coming on contraception or considering joining a program, you know, like is it a 6 month thing? Is it a 3 month thing?
Most people just come off contraception, or maybe they haven't been on contraception. They just start trying straight away and they don't redo a prep phase. So this is not that it's wrong, but I would much prefer people come to us, especially with something like they're going for a round of IVF. I want to work with you well in advance of that. I want to work with you a good bit before you're actually trying to conceive. So to start with contraception, like for some women, it can take up to 6 months for their period to resume post oral contraceptive pill. So that would be a good idea, like to give yourself at least kind of 6 to 9 months before you're actually thinking about trying to conceive, to come off the contraceptive pill, let everything settle, let the dust settle, let your hormones get back in check, and prep from there. So that kind of takes us to people who are not on contraception. So if you're not on contraception, I would say give yourself 3 months. And the reason for that is, it's really to do with egg health and sperm health. So with age, unfortunately, naturally we get a decline with egg quality, and the same with sperm. I feel like we don't really talk about that as much.
Yeah,
because
that was actually a question I did have. Like, what do the men need to be doing?
It does. Like, their fertility might not necessarily decline, but their sperm quality declines. So I suppose we have people like men like in their 70s still having babies, but that doesn't mean that their sperm quality is the same as it was when they were 20. So they will get a natural decline with especially egg quality and sperm quality with age. But the amazing thing is that there's a 3-month window before, prior to conception, where the egg goes through this maturation process. It's called folliculogenesis. And basically what happens is we have this opportunity to really impact the health of that egg through nutrition and lifestyle changes. So it's really, really sensitive to what we're doing in our external environment with nutrition and exercise and lifestyle. And then with sperm, it's a little bit more straightforward because ultimately we're born as women, we're all born with our eggs. So it's a little bit different with sperm because it actually forms completely from nothing over a kind of 2 to 3 month period. I think it's about like 65 days. So men have this massive opportunity to improve their sperm parameters or their sperm health that 3 months before conception. So that's why I always say like having that preconception phase is really important. So like what I would call like your trimester zero, that's what I call it. And just making sure you have all your ducks in a row and you're just giving your body the best possible chance of having a healthy pregnancy.
God, I'm actually trying to think what I was doing in those 3 months before.
I actually knew you were going to say that. And like one thing I'm always mindful of is like, this is for like, bear in mind that I tend to work with a lot of people who are struggling with trying to conceive and they've gone through like a really long, arduous journey. It's like, well, what can we do with those people? Of course, like you're going to have a perfectly healthy baby, even though no matter what you did like 3 months prior. But this is kind of for the people who've been told, okay, your egg health isn't like it's suboptimal, or your sperm health is suboptimal, and trying to improve things from there.
Yeah. And I'm also very, I suppose, like cautious or aware that, you know, I'm in a very lucky position, especially. And like, I think anyone listening to this, you know, they feel like I'm very lucky to get pregnant the way I did. Yeah. So I just wanted like a note that, you know, the one thing I did realize, I was saying to you before, that when I found out I was pregnant and wanted to like arm myself with as much information as I could, is that I really started listening to things and realized how many people are struggling. And that's why I wanted to talk to you and get your information out there. Because so the next thing I was going to ask you, like, when do you start looking at tests? Like, how do you know? Because obviously, you know, it is a bit of a, you know, a one moment thing that has to happen. But when do you start thinking, okay, this isn't happening for us, or maybe we should start looking at taking tests or joining programs?
So for me, testing should actually be prior to trying to conceive. So there's a couple of tests you can just pop into your GP and have done. The main ones being thyroid function, because that's really critical for getting pregnant and also staying pregnant. So suboptimal thyroid function has actually been associated with early pregnancy loss. So that's one to just make sure we have covered before we go and think about trying to conceive. The other one is vitamin D. It's such a huge marker for our overall health, but especially fertility. If you think about vitamin D deficiency, that's been associated with poor implantation rates. So the actual ability of that embryo to implant into the lining of the uterus. So vitamin D status is so important. Most of us are deficient in Ireland, especially if we're not supplementing. So it's really important to make sure we're on top of that. Your folate, your iron, just making sure that you're going into pregnancy in a nutrient full state. And that's kind of something to note as well about the oral contraceptive pill. So I don't love when I see people coming off the oral contraceptive pill and getting pregnant straight away. And the reason for that is, in the process of actually metabolizing the oral contraceptive pill, it is a medication. And as a result, we actually use up a lot of our nutrients, our B vitamins, our zinc, our selenium, our magnesium. So if you're coming off the pill, you are more than likely already nutrient depleted. So it's important to make sure that we're going into pregnancy in a nutrient full state. Just really, really nourished, because it's a marathon. Yeah.
So would you suggest people who are even on the oral contraceptive pill, who maybe aren't even thinking about getting pregnant yet, should they be supplementing with the likes of what you said there, like vitamin D? I suppose everyone nearly probably should.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, anyone who's on the oral contraceptive pill, especially like something like definitely your vitamin D anyway, everyone should be taking vitamin D. We should ideally be getting it tested to make sure that we're not over supplementing. But for the most part, it's very rare that I see someone with more than sufficient over supplementing with vitamin D.
I always felt like I was like, fine for vitamin D, like when I was traveling and everything. I'm like, I get enough sunshine. But then obviously come back to Ireland, I was like, right, I need to keep up. Yeah. Even because I always associated with like low mood. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that was always my motivation, keep supplementing vitamin D.
So that's kind of, that's if you're kind of just before you're thinking about trying to conceive. Then it reaches a point, maybe if you've been 6 months trying to conceive and if you're over the age of 35. So that would be classed as infertility if you haven't gotten pregnant in 6 months after the age of 35. So in that sense, I'd definitely be looking at different factors, especially like your FSH, your LH. These are blood tests that you can have done. Your estrogen, your progesterone, your kind of different male androgens, just to make sure they're all in check. And then the big one, the biggest one, is sperm parameters. Like, make sure our motility, morphology, count are all in the right place. Because I feel like, and this is a massive narrative that I'm trying to change, is that we tend to, if someone's trying to, if we're struggling to conceive as a couple, the woman just takes the burden on herself for some bizarre reason. I think it's because we carry the baby. But if you can't get pregnant or if you're suffering from reoccurring pregnancy loss, it's so, so, so important to have a look at like the sperm, the health of the sperm. And what's absolutely insane is we have couples that have been trying to conceive through IVF. And this is, I've probably had this story about 5 times now. And their consultant has said to them, you might need to consider egg donor. But they haven't ruled out that the sperm, the health of the sperm, the health of that DNA, the quality of the sperm is actually okay. So you have your basic sperm health parameters, which are your morphology, your motility, your count, which is like how many are they, how do they look, how do they swim. But then you have what's called our DNA fragmentation. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's basically a test. It is a little bit expensive, but I also feel like if you're going through an arduous fertility journey, we need to have a look at this. So DNA fragmentation, what it does is it looks at the fragmentation of the DNA, so the breakup of the DNA in the actual head of the sperm, and it gives us an indication of as to the quality of the sperm. So we've had clients where that hasn't been ruled out. They haven't done that test, but then they're looking at egg donor. They're just assuming that it's egg quality. So that's like looking at, all you're doing is looking at the shape and how it swims. You're not actually looking at the inside of it and how it actually functions. So it's so, so important to actually look at male health as well, male parameters.
A few people listening are probably like, yeah, actually. And so if someone's listening and they're in that maybe infertility bracket that you've mentioned, where do you begin? Do you go to your GP or is it like, do you go in? I saw you've got a list of blood tests that you like to ask for. Mm-hmm. Like what would one person, if they're just listening now, like where would they begin?
I would say their GP for those blood tests. Then what can happen for your sperm parameters, you can pop into your GP and they might refer on to a clinic to have that tested. But yeah, I would say start with your GP from there.
And armed with your list of blood tests that you need, because I know you talk about that being in the optimal range and being in the normal range. Can you explain a little bit about that?
So yeah, like it's kind of a tough conversation to have because I never want to discredit what GPs do. There are some absolutely incredible GPs out there, but then I get a lot of the stories from the GPs that are quite dismissive and maybe interpreting blood tests in the wrong way. So ultimately, just because something is in range in your bloods, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's optimal. So optimal and in range is not the same thing. So you can be at the upper end or the lower end of a range and that's suboptimal. So it's really important that, number one, you're getting the right bloods done. Number two, you're getting the bloods done at the right time, the right day. Like there's different, like you've FSH, LH, estradiol on your day 3, and then you've like day 21, depending on when your ovulation falls for your progesterone. So as well, the time of day, like for various things like prolactin and stuff like that. So it's not that straightforward. A lot of people go in to their GP and say, I'm thinking about trying to conceive, or I've been trying to conceive for a few months, and they'll come back to me with a full blood count, like their lymphocytes, their white blood cells, their red blood cells. I'm like, that doesn't tell us anything. It just tells us the basic markers. So it's really important to know what you're having tested, when it's being tested, and then that it's being interpreted in the right way.
Yeah, God, it is so complicated.
I know.
And just to bring it back to something a little less complicated, a lot of people are asking, what do you use to accurately track your menstrual cycle and in particular ovulation?
Yeah, so I would say everyone needs to be tracking their period on an app. I'm like, surely everyone's
just
doing that now.
They're not always reliable.
So number one, your period on an app. And then what's interesting as well is everyone just kind of assumes that if they're getting a period, they're ovulating every month. But there are some months where you can have what's called an anovulatory cycle. So you don't actually ovulate in that given month. So it's important if you're trying to conceive that you know exactly when it is that you're ovulating. So there are a couple of markers that you can use. They come with their pros and cons. To be honest, the one that I find brilliant is changes in your cervical fluid. So like it tends to change from kind of like a creamy consistency to like more of like a raw egg white consistency and then back to a creamy consistency. So that raw egg white material is your, or that raw egg white consistency is kind of your, like what we would class as like your fertile mucus. It's not a definitive sign to say that you've ovulated, but it's definitely a sign that things are moving in the right direction. So it doesn't absolutely confirm that you ovulated, but for most people, it's a sign that it has happened. The only thing that can definitively confirm that you've ovulated is a day 21 progesterone test. So I always use the inverted commas day 21 progesterone test. And the reason for that is day 21 progesterone test works perfectly for someone who ovulates on day 14, but most of us don't ovulate on day 14. So it's 7 days after you suspect that you've ovulated, pop into your GP and have your progesterone tested. And the reason that's a marker or it confirms ovulation is when we release that egg from that follicle, the follicle dies and it becomes what's called our corpus luteum. And our corpus luteum is this hormone secreting body that secretes progesterone. And our progesterone is going to peak 7 days post ovulation. So that's your progesterone test, that 7 days post ovulation, if that's over a sufficient threshold, that will confirm ovulation. And then the other way of confirming it is your change in basal body temperature. So your temperature is going to increase post-ovulation. So I suppose the negative or the con of this or the drawback is that you have to test your body temperature. Like you have to be really meticulous about it every single morning. And bear in mind, I have people coming to me who are really stressed about fertility. Like when you're waking up first thing in the morning and you're testing that, it can almost be more of a stressor that you're looking out for. So that's your basal body temperature. You can use something like Natural Cycles or those kind of tracking apps that have that algorithm that will tell you, okay, you're fertile here, you're not fertile there. And other ones would be your OPKs, your ovulation predictor kits.
I haven't heard that one.
So OPKs are just your urine test strips, the test strips that you pee on. Honestly, I've had such difficulty with these. Like I've had clients who have... it's saying that they're not ovulating and then they get pregnant. Like, and then I've other ones saying that they are ovulating, but then on a day 21 progesterone test, they're not. So that's one thing I would be really, really mindful of. They're quite tricky. So I tend not to recommend them. But those would be the main ways in which you would determine ovulation.
And you mentioned their stress. Like, obviously this is a huge thing and it's such, like, I just feel like it's such a hard balance for people who are obviously very stressed about wanting to get pregnant and then trying to balance. Like, obviously you can't just say, forget about it.
I know. And everyone loves saying, well, I know this couple that we're trying to conceive for years. I know. And it's just like, I just knew this couple that we're trying to conceive for years. And then they just stopped thinking about it and they got pregnant. It's like, why would you say that to someone? It's just so unhelpful. It's like, just don't think about it. It's like literally, oh, don't think about a red bus. It's like, we're all going to think about a red bus, you know?
And you know, I haven't written out like all the questions that people asked, but there was just one. It was in a message and I wrote it out because it's something that I hadn't really considered, but I'm just going to read it out here. She said, I feel included in that conversation should be time to put aside to talk about when one should stop trying to have a baby. The fertility clinics do their job or try to in getting you pregnant, but they are not concerned about the emotional and general mental devastation that's left in the wake of trying to conceive. Stress is such a factor in hampering people's efforts, yet the whole process leads people to be more stressed than they've ever been. My point is someone needs to at least include in a conversation on fertility the possibility that it's okay to stop trying so hard to have a baby and that you can still have a good life. If fertility clinics cared, they'd offer counselling, but that's not how they operate and that's fair enough, but women need more than a cocktail of drugs. They need support, mental and emotional. 100%. And I read that and I was like, God, I mean, something that I've always said to friends that were struggling, you know, I feel like, you know, like, because especially because I wasn't planning on having kids originally, you know, and I always said, you know, you can have a good life. You know, it probably sounds condescending, but it's kind of trying to give, I was trying to give out that message online, especially that like, yes, you can have a fulfilling life without kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally respect that. But ultimately, when there's people like me personally, like, I've always wanted to be a mother. Mm-hmm. Like if you told me that I couldn't have a child, like I would be absolutely devastated. I feel like I would do absolutely anything to have a baby. And a lot of people feel like that, you know? So it does depend on the person. There's a lot of people that you could say that to and be like, no, that's fair. I could have a happy life. But if you were to say that to me and my husband, we'd be absolutely devastated and we just wouldn't stop. So it's just so hard. And that's one of the reasons that the Fertility Focus, the program that we designed, has a mindset piece. So we actually have a chartered counselling psychologist who does modules on that particular topic because it's huge. It's so significant and it's not talked about enough. And all of your friends are getting pregnant if you're in that age bracket, and every, like, I don't know about you, but like everyone on Instagram is pregnant, like literally everyone, like even you're pregnant. I'm like, it's insane. So being around that and being like subjected to that all the time, and also not being able to talk and feeling like maybe you can't talk about it to your friends, it's just so difficult. It's so, so hard. And as I said, it's so hard to feel like you're at a loss, that you've no control over it. It's really, really difficult. And then as well, like, and I talk about this a lot, like this isn't talked about enough. It's okay if you find out that your best friend is pregnant and you're really happy for, you can also be really sad for yourself. And then the issue is that this isn't talked about enough, and people feel really sad. And then they also add guilt on top of that, because you're like, I feel guilty for feeling shit because my friend is pregnant. It's like, no, that's normal. It would be abnormal if you didn't feel like that. So it's just that we don't talk about this stuff enough.
Yeah, I saw it on your website. You know, you're like all the things that you help with and, you know, the practicalities of it, but also how to feel if you get invited to another baby shower.
Yeah.
And like that's, yeah, I think it's so great that you are covering that, because it sounds like, you know, that message that, you know, there's so many people that don't know how to handle it, handle the stress around, or even just to know when to stop.
Yeah.
I don't know. That must be such, it's obviously,
it's
there's
such
no
an
answer.
Individual decision. Yeah.
And something I had considered back, like probably over a year ago, when I was like, you know, maybe I do want to have kids, was freezing my eggs.
Mm-hmm.
I never got around to it yet, but what do you talk to people about doing that, or do you, what the process is? Obviously, all I know is that it involves taking a lot of hormones and stuff, but that's all about I know of it. Can you tell us a bit more?
So it's essentially like the egg retrieval process of IVF. So like you kind of, with IVF, you have two kind of main steps. You have the egg retrieval process, and then you have the transfer process, where they've taken the eggs and essentially fused them with the semen or the sperm, and hopefully that grows into an embryo and a day 5 blastocyst. After that point, it's transferred into the lining of the uterus. So retrieving your eggs is the same as egg freezing. So that same process, the eggs are retrieved and they're put on ice for in X amount of years' time. If you meet a partner and you decide that you want to have a baby, then absolutely. Because ultimately, like, your eggs when you're 20 are in much better shape than they would be than your eggs when you're 40. So that's the premise behind. But at the same time, like, it tends to be pushed on women a lot, especially obviously by fertility clinics. And it's not necessarily just because you're able to freeze like 20 eggs, that doesn't mean like you have the ability to go on and have 20 kids or 20 embryos. Like, there's a lot that has to happen in order for that egg to be thawed properly. It has to be fused with the sperm. It has to grow to that day 5 blast or day 3 blast, depending on when the transfer is done. And then it has to transfer, and then it has to implant to the lining of the uterus, and then it has to make it past that kind of 12-week phase. So I think it's not as comforting. I feel like, does that make sense?
It's not a solid
100%.
Don't rely on that process
100%
in the future. That's interesting.
It's not something I discourage. Obviously it's a personal decision, but I don't feel like if someone has 20 frozen eggs, don't think that it's 20 potential babies.
That's what I did. I did watch a friend, she had it on Instagram and highlighted the whole experience, but it sounded like she wanted to, or she wished she had done it sooner. I think, you know, the later you leave it, obviously the less eggs they can retrieve and the less quality. And, you know, I think the numbers were like dwindling in terms of what came out, what they got, and then what would actually be usable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the earlier, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is, I talk about this a lot on podcasts, is, you know, our ideally early 20s would be the time to get pregnant, but it's so hard with women and careers.
Yeah.
And,
like, ultimately, if you think about it, like, if you got your period when you're like 16, that's the start of your fertility. So when you're 35, you're kind of coming towards the end of your fertility.
I know, and I still feel like it was a teenage pregnancy. I don't want to tell my mom. I think that's a societal thing, is that we're delaying it, and then it's resulting in, obviously, you're seeing a lot of people struggling.
Yeah, I think our average age in Ireland at the moment is 33 for your first baby.
Really?
Yeah, that'll be you. You're
34, but thank you.
Yeah.
I do look only 33. And actually, this is another question, someone asked me this last week. She was asking about what exercises to do in the 2-week window. And I was like, like, what? So
you don't even know about the 2 week window because you were like, oh my God, I'm pregnant.
So there's the 2 week window where you basically, I presume that's the time between you have sex and where you find out you're pregnant.
So the 2 week wait, like for someone who's trying to get pregnant, is like that wait, it's a long wait. So obviously, you know, when you're ovulating, you've had sex and there's a 2 week wait before you can actually, well, you can test sooner than that, but it's not always going to show up.
Yeah.
But
interestingly, my Whoop, like the recovery just dropped.
Really?
Like it was like, went from, and I was like, that is so weird. And then I was kind of like in the back of my head, I was like,
so interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe I was like, oh no, it was maybe because I'm due my period, and I wasn't. But like the Whoop.
So was it a missed period? Like, did you not get your period?
Yeah.
I kind of knew
there was a chance. And then, and then I due my period on the Friday. And then on Monday morning, I was like, I'm going to do a test.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
And there's no, like, if it's like 2 or 3 days after your period, there's no denying that line. Like, it's so clear. Or was it a digital?
No, it's a line.
Okay, yeah.
And to be honest, like, it's funny, I was flying back from Dublin to London and I was like, I'm just going to, you know, in my head, I was like, I knew I was going to do a test after. And I was kind of like, yeah, I think, you know, either way.
It wouldn't be the worst thing.
Yeah. And that's when I was like, oh my God, I've matured.
That's amazing.
And then I felt so lucky. You know, like it wasn't like a teenage pregnancy where you know, I was like, and obviously well supported.
Yeah.
We both wanted it. And obviously my parents, like I was still nervous about telling my parents, you know, like I'm married. But they were, there's no Catholic guilt.
Yeah. That was amazing.
But yeah, no, very lucky. But that 2 week window.
Oh yes, the 2 week window. So, yeah, like, again, we've no research on what we're supposed to be doing in the 2 week window. Like, but what I would ultimately say is just take it easy. But it's kind of the same thing that you'd be doing if you're trying to conceive anyway, like not absolutely killing yourself with like high intensity interval training sessions, like trying to get work on your sleep, all the things that we should be doing anyway, working on your good quality nutrition, your supplementation. Like in terms of exercise, the main thing is no real, really, really like high intensity, like 100% max effort, like sprints and stuff like that.
But as I say, that's the basics when it comes to like general advice. Yeah. You know, like I think, you know, a lot of, and that's actually something I wanted to ask, exercise and diet. Like I feel like there's a balance that you need, I suppose, to be in the right place, probably to conceive, and also just for general health.
Yeah.
Like, do you find a lot of women, I mean, I wanted to ask about hypothalamic amenorrhea, HA.
Yeah, HA.
I like typed it out and I was like, say it properly. I can never say it properly.
I'm like, I can never spell it. So yeah. It's fine.
I will show you how I spelled it. HA, you know, recovering from HA, which is like not having a period. Obviously, a lot of people then, you know, when they're younger, and I see it all the time, the younger girls, you know, it's like, you just want to be lean, you just want to train.
I know.
And they're not kind of thinking of the longer health. Like, so like, what would you say, are there a lot of people, and you get in 30s and 40s that have regret their training in their 20s? Or, so let's talk about balance with exercise and nutrition.
So ultimately, like, for, it's obviously, it's difficult to tell someone who's in their early 20s, like, this is so important for your fertility. But then obviously when you start to approach like your 30s and maybe you're thinking about trying to conceive, it becomes so much more important. But ultimately, like, what are you sacrificing in order to be that lean? Like, for some people, you're sacrificing your fertility. Like, your fertility is a marker of your health. Your menstrual cycle is a marker of your health. You're supposed to get it every month. It might not have to be 28 days. It might be 26, 35. That's fine. But if you're not getting it, or if it's really, really long, like 45, 60 day cycles, it's like your body like giving you like a red flag, like the ultimate red flag. So I always say our period is like our fifth vital sign, like our other vital signs, like our breathing rate, our respiratory rate, our heart rate, our blood pressure. And if you woke up in the morning and your blood pressure was through the roof, you felt really faint, or your temperature was through the roof, you'd be like, oh, there's something wrong, I might pop into the GP. But if women don't get their periods, they're just like, oh, I didn't get my period this month. I'm like, no, it's literally, it's so important. It's such a red flag. It's your body's way of communicating with you that something is up. So ultimately, it's a personal choice, but I always try to say to people, like, what are you sacrificing in order to be that lean? And also, why do you want to look that lean? Like, that's obviously a different conversation, the deeper meaning of it. Like, what are you trying to prove? What are you trying to, where are your values? But that's what you're sacrificing in order to look that lean, your actual fertility, which is such a huge marker of your health.
I know. I went to the doctor and actually, I was going into the doctor for something else. It's like a sore elbow or an infection in my elbow. And I was like, by the way, I haven't actually got my period in a few months. And she was,
did they suggest putting you on the pill?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, first of all, she said, do you want kids? And I was like, no.
Oh my God.
And then I was like, so I'm not too worried. Don't worry. You know, I was in my head, I was like, I don't really want kids. So it's not that, it doesn't matter if I don't get a period. Like, what, when I know now that, like, no, if you're not getting a period, that's a sign there's something up.
Yeah. It's so much more than and fertility as
just
well.
Just definitely drill home that the bleed when you're on the pill is not your period. So, like, her suggesting putting me back on the pill
to
just
quote
masks
unquote
the problem.
Regulate. Yeah. To quote unquote regulate.
And that was a question I have
hormones.
For you is like, obviously, there's a lot of people who've been on long-term contraception. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably see people then who come off it and have struggled to conceive. But is there a negative effect of being on it long-term? Or is it just the fact that there's a risk that it's hiding issues?
Yeah, that's the latter. So it's not a case that, well, from the research, it's not a case that the being on oral contraceptive pill for a prolonged period is actually directly negatively impacting our fertility. That's what we know from the research. That's not my opinion. It's actually just, that's what the science says. But as you alluded to there, the issue is that it's potentially masking something that could have manifested 5 years ago and you didn't realize because you've just been getting that pill bleed, that withdrawal bleed. So the issue is that you've kind of just prolonged the process and you've kind of kicked the can down the road to deal with at a later date while you've been on the pill. So that's why, again, as I said, it's important to kind of nearly 9 months. Of course, there's women who will come off the pill and literally...
Yeah, it's like, disclaimer, it's not our fault if you get pregnant the first month.
You'll literally have your period straight away. Like, you'll ovulate 14 days later, which is amazing. But I tend to see the more complex cases where that's not the case. But it's not, as far as we know from the research, it's not a case that the pill directly negatively impacts fertility.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And because another question people had was around contraception and what would you say is the best form?
So, like, I don't really, for me, I'm like, I don't specialize in contraception.
Yeah, I was gonna
say, this
is the opposite. I'm
more so specialized in people getting pregnant, but I would always prefer to see people using like non-hormonal forms of contraception. But then at the same time, like, if you look at something like the copper coil, it's a real 50-50 split. Like, I've had clients that have had such bad experience with the copper coil, and then I've had clients who've had amazing experience and barely even know it's there and they ovulate every month, they get their period every month, and it's great. But so I don't tend not to like recommend one over the other. And then we have something like our Natural Cycles, which is our tracking app, which again, like, I'm always a little bit mindful of recommending because you have to be really, really like on your game with this. Like, you have to as well, like, you'll notice if you've ever used the app before that if you've had less than 2 hours of your normal sleep, like if you normally get 8 hours and you get 6 hours, I think, as far as I know, your temperature might not necessarily be accurate. If you're sick, it's not going to be accurate. So there's flaws to every form of contraception. I've used kind of that kind of method. I've done well so far, thankfully. But I ultimately know that it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, anyone who's doing shift work, anyone who doesn't sleep great, anyone who's frequently sick. So it really just depends on the person. But I generally would look for someone to be on a form of non-hormonal contraception where they're still ovulating.
Okay, and then back onto your specialist topic. And actually something that a lot of people asked about was trying to conceive after miscarriage, or, you know, obviously when you have one miscarriage, when to question, you know, does something need to change or how soon after?
Yeah, so in terms of trying to conceive after, you technically can conceive straight away if you want. So you will have you will experience your miscarriage and then potentially ovulate, whether it's 14 days later or it can be a little bit longer post-miscarriage. So generally the rule of thumb is that you will probably get a period 4 to 6 weeks after you've had your miscarriage. So that would mean that you ovulate on day 14 or you ovulate around like day 28. So technically you can get pregnant in that next ovulation, like 2 weeks later. But the reason that most consultants will recommend that you have a period and then try, like have another period and then try, is just the dating. The reason is that it's difficult to actually date the pregnancy and when your actual due date is. But for it actually is okay to get pregnant straight away. So that would be the other thing. What was the other question?
So, you know, if you're experiencing, like I said, multiple miscarriages, like when do you start looking at, or what can you do then?
So the guidelines have actually changed on this recently. I think they changed in January. So previous to January, you would have to have 3 losses in order to be referred onto a unit or a specialist. Which is
actually a lot.
It's insane. And like, if you were to compare this to another disease, it's like, oh, well, I know it's not the same, but like, oh, your cancer is only stage 1. So we'll wait until it just doesn't make any sense. Like, if you were, it's like, oh, it's not bad enough. Like your injury isn't bad enough to put you in a cast. It just doesn't make any sense. Like we'll wait till three. So thankfully the guidelines have now changed. So if you've had two back-to-back losses, and that also counts for what's called a chemical pregnancy, which I kind of hate the term chemical pregnancy, but that's a really early pregnancy, like up until 5 weeks. That would be classed as a loss as well. So if you've had two of those back-to-back, then that would, you would qualify for intervention or for further assessment. And generally that looks like something like progesterone pessaries or progesterone gel, because progesterone is such an important hormone for gestation, pro-gestation, that's what it breaks down to. So progesterone is such an important hormone, especially in that first 12 weeks. So anyone who's experienced loss in that first 12 weeks, it's really important because it maintains that pregnancy until the placenta has a chance to kick in after 12 weeks into the second trimester. So normally that intervention after the two losses is progesterone pessaries or gels, and also aspirin to help thin the blood if there's a blood clotting issue.
God, yeah, I can imagine the worry even on my first pregnancy of miscarriage. I can't imagine the worry when people have had multiple.
It's really hard. Yeah, absolutely.
I also wanted to ask about pregnancy for people with PCOS or endometriosis. Does it create more difficulty, or what happens there?
So endometriosis would be classed as like an unexplained infertility. So if someone has been trying to conceive for a long time, or if there's been losses, I would always have them chat with their consultant about a laparoscopy or a Hycosi, just to see if there's like tissue in there, like inflammatory tissue that's preventing the embryo from implanting or causing an early pregnancy loss. So that's a huge thing. PCOS, it's not as complex, to be fair, because it doesn't have that impact that endometriosis would on that internal environment, on the environment of your uterus. So, but PCOS, like for the most part, people that come to us with PCOS have irregular cycles, or they have really, really long cycles. So they find it difficult to determine when it is they're ovulating. And then if they're only getting a cycle every 60 days, they're actually only fertile for half of the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So a PCOS, like you know yourself with working with clients, PCOS is actually, I won't say it's a straightforward fix, but it's so...
Compared to endometriosis.
Endometriosis is a lot more complex, but PCOS is, it's really open, or it's really sensitive to our changes in nutrition and lifestyle. So it tends to be something that we get really good results with.
Great. It's the basics are resistance training, or low intensity training, but more resistance training.
Resistance training, yeah. Absolutely.
Obviously not under eating, you know, reducing stress.
Yeah, managing your blood sugars.
It's like all the basics of health, I think, as well.
And I feel like it always comes back to that.
Yeah.
I'm like, just eat your vegetables, manage your blood sugars, don't stress.
Don't do crazy diets, crazy intense training, which is the advice I give to most people.
Yeah.
And another question about trying to conceive when breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Does breastfeeding affect, I don't know, fertility?
Yeah. So for the most part, when you're breastfeeding, you will produce your prolactin, pro-lactation. It's in the name.
I've just learned about that one.
So prolactin it almost acts as like a natural contraceptive. It's probably like nature's way of being like, you've got enough on your plate, you don't need another baby. So when you're breastfeeding, your prolactin is going to be really elevated, and that will stop you from ovulating and therefore stop you from getting a period, and therefore you're not fertile. Generally, what I find is for most women, for a lot of women, when they start to drop night feeds, so when you're all of a sudden leaving it a 12-hour span or maybe a little bit shorter, if you all of a sudden drop night feeds, your prolactin can drop, and then you can get your period after that. So there is plenty of people that can continue breastfeeding definitely during the day and then also get pregnant. Yeah.
Because I had a theory before I knew about prolactin, that people that were breastfeeding and not getting their period, I thought it was because they were basically in too much of a calorie deficit. You know, no. I thought it was too much of an energy balance.
It's definitely, I'm sure that's a factor for a lot of people as well. And we have had so many women who have come to us with secondary infertility. So they've had a baby, no issues whatsoever. They've breastfed that baby, and then all of a sudden they stopped breastfeeding months ago, and their period hasn't resumed. But I'm like, well, what's changed? Like, you're so stressed, you're not sleeping as well because you're being woken up by a crazy child every 2 hours. Your nutrition definitely wasn't what it was like 2 years ago. You're probably not on top of your supplementation. So again, it just always comes
and
back to the basics.
Probably trying to trying to lose weight. And
yeah.
Under eating.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a different pressure on.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, I mean, I think things are changing a bit.
A little bit, hopefully. But then, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I was even talking about yesterday, like that, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're bump. And I'm like, yeah, I love it. And I was like, and you know, I love dressing and, you know, like showing off the bump, but there's this pressure straight after that you have to hide it, that it's like, it's no longer praised. It then needs to be gone.
I know.
And, you know, you're nearly dressing to hide it. And I was like, I don't know what way I'll be, you know, but it's kind of sad that it's, celebrate the body celebrated and then shamed.
I just felt like I had such an appreciation. I was just like, oh my God, go you, like such a badass, like push a baby out of your vagina and now you're feeding it for 6 months. Like it's just, it's unreal.
Yeah,
I just feel like that appreciation just isn't there for a lot of people. But that's, again, that's society. That's the narrative. Yeah. That's the narrative that we have.
We can just start these conversations. Yeah, hopefully here we are. Actually, something else that someone asked, and I wouldn't have thought of it myself. And so do you work with any like same-sex couples trying to have a baby?
Yeah, absolutely. We do. Okay. Yeah, 100%. So they just work with us. They work with a sperm donor. And one of the partner has to go through the egg retrieval process.
So it's basically IVF. But then I'm with a sperm donor.
Exactly. That's okay. Exactly what it is. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's pretty straightforward then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Interesting.
Or you can do IUI, which is like insertion of the semen like directly into the vagina. Like imagine like a turkey. Well, it's obviously not a turkey baster, but that's the premise of it.
Someone was doing that in a book I read recently.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think that's pretty much, like there was a lot of specific questions around, you know, even people that had cancer. Like, have you dealt with people like that? Like, you know, because they're afraid of their estrogen getting too high
again. During pregnancy?
Yeah. And trying to conceive. I don't know if that makes sense or if I'm saying the right way.
Yeah, it's obviously, it's kind of a case by case basis. It depends on the medication that they're, it's not really general like a general advice.
Oh, well, I've learned so much there, I think. And I'm like, I've tried to include a lot. I hope it's
covered a good bit.
Yeah, and like on your page, you've got so much information on the different blood tests, the different ranges that you'd be looking for, what to ask for, and like obviously your program is Fertility Focus, that was called, and you can sign up anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's on your website. I'll have a link in the show
Thank
notes.
Thank you.
And thefitclinic.ie. No, I mean, you have a team of 10 now, I saw.
11. Yeah.
11.
We just
up.
Took on Christina. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And you deal with everything, not just fertility.
Yeah, so like it's really like female health. So anything female health related. But then we also do like weight loss, performance and that kind of thing. But for the most part, it's, you know yourself, the complex cases tend to be female health related. So they're way more interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. So good to chat.
Okay, thank you for listening. Hopefully you took some information from that. There was a lot to learn. And I'd suggest going to thefitclinic.ie or look at Michelle's Instagram to figure out even where to begin. And as a thank you to anyone who's made it to the end of the episode, I have a discount for The Furnace, which is Life Lessons. And also a discount for with our friends at Flow State, which is the stunning yoga mats that you see me use. And they have some new products as well. You can check out their website, flowstate.ie. And to get 30% off, use Life Lessons 30. And thanks again. See you in the next episode.